Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. Only 10 episodes old, this podcast is just getting started. And I want to thank you sincerely for listening. Since our debut in July, our audience has grown from a few dozen to a few hundred per episode. That's beyond great. But I would love to reach even more people. That's where you come in. First, if you like what you've been hearing, please take a minute to rate and review On the Line wherever you get your podcasts. A high rating on the Apple Podcast app is especially helpful. Next, please help spread the word. You might be surprised how much difference a single recommendation can make, especially on social media. This week's episode is designed to help you share what On the Line is all about. I've edited together highlights from our first 10 episodes as a kind of sampler. It's a great way to introduce someone new to the podcast and to take a look back at all our fascinating guests so far. Again, thank you for helping get On the Line off to a wonderful start. My first interview was with Texarkana financial advisor and co-host of the Stacking Benjamins podcast, Joe Saul Sehi. So you've been thinking about people and money for a long time. What have you learned about human psychology from doing this kind of thing? What sort of insights do you have into people?
I think we think that money is harder than it is. I think we think that for a lot of us, we think that building wealth, that there's something not great about that. There's something greedy about it. There's something me about it. I think that. I also think that people think that people that are great with money have some gene. And I'll tell you, it is none of that. You can be a more productive member of your local community if you handle money decently. You don't got to be a rocket scientist, but if you handle it decently, you can think about other things and about other people and not about how the bills are going to get paid tomorrow. And certainly, by the way, listen, I was in this position. There's a time when you just have to think about how the bills are getting paid tomorrow, and that's okay. But if you build some basic systems, and there's one in particular that won the day for me that people don't realize, and that's to automate it.
Yeah.
If you can spend your time making the $100 decisions and not making the $1 decisions, like automate as many of those $1 decisions as possible. And I'll give you an example. People would tell me, they're like, I can't save. And I would ask them, do you have a 401k at work? You have a retirement plan at work? And they go, well, yeah. Have you saved any money there? Yeah, I've saved $5,000 there. How did you do that? You hid money from yourself.
In episode 2, I asked Texarkana, Texas interim city manager David Orr about his local roots. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Texarkana, originally from here, graduated from Liberty Isle High School, and our family's been here for many generations, and we call it our hometown. So
this is more than just a job for you. You're really embedded in the community.
It is. Both sides of my family, both my grandparents on my dad's side and my mom's side, were heavily involved in the community. My grandfather, my great-grandfather, was a superintendent for Liberty Isle Schools. Okay. And for many years, and was kind of informally known as the mayor of Liberty Isle. And then on my dad's side of the family, very involved in church and just different community programs and things through Harvest Texarkana and feeding groups and things. So always had that civic kind of minded approach taught from a very young age in our family.
Oh, wow. And tell me about your family. How many kids do you have?
So we have three. Oh, wow. 7, 4, and 1. And so that's a big part of what I do every day, along with my wife, Laura, to wrangle the kids, but also, too, just to know that everything that I'm doing at the city and from a community standpoint ultimately is to, you know, make our community a better place ultimately for my kids and for others to live. So,
Texarkana, Arkansas City Manager Jay Ellington told me how he learned about the Texarkana community. It's been, as we're recording this, about 6 weeks since you started.
That's correct.
What's it been like? What have you learned about Texarkana? Are there any priorities that you see now that maybe you had to learn about in these first initial stages?
So, and I'm still learning. Of course, even yesterday I spent the whole afternoon with the police department doing some touring and talking about some of their services and learning the depth of their operations. Mm-hmm. But again, I've begun to learn a number of things about the community and began to formulate kind of three areas that I wanted to concentrate on for the first year or so here. And those have come to me from just various discussions with people. What I tried to do first was get out and get a good feel for the staff folks. Mm-hmm. And we've got a great group of people leading us in that area. And so I spent a lot of time individually with them and then collectively with them in a group as well. I then moved to our elected leaders and the board of directors and the mayor, spent some additional time with them talking about their wards and special interests that they may have, some things that they may want to see the city do into the future. And then I began to work my way out into the community at mm-hmm. that point in time. So I reached back to some of our previous elected leaders. I reached out to some of the county folks. I reached out to some of the nonprofit folks. I reached to the downtown folks. Mm-hmm. So I just began to reach out and try to bring people in just to let them know who I am. Just sit in my office and talk about interest that they have and anything they want to share with me. So gotten some good history stories out of that, as well as right. Some good I'd like to see you do this story kind of right. too. So I've gotten some of all of that, and I'm continuing to do that.
I talked with virologist Ben Newman, formerly of Texas A&M University Texarkana, about the coronavirus pandemic and found his answer to this question especially interesting. So these viruses, coronaviruses generally, and other viruses, are out there in wildlife populations going through this process of natural selection. How worried are you about that zoonotic transmission from animals to humans? Is this something we're going to see a lot more of? How can it be prevented?
Right. This is a thing we've seen happen two more times it was early 2021. So there was something that was kind of halfway between the dog coronavirus and the cat coronavirus, but it picked up just enough mutations that it actually made a person sick. And if a virus can get into a person and make them sick, then there's a pretty good chance that, I mean, there's nothing that special about any one of us, unfortunately.
Right.
So it probably has the potential to spread. There are a lot of cat and dog coronaviruses out there. We usually don't vaccinate for them. We actually don't even have great vaccines for those things. And so that's a risk because, we have pets. I have pets. I have cats and dogs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the potential is there.
And not to mention farming.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, yeah. So there are cow coronaviruses. Those are closer to some of the mild human common cold viruses. And those also appear to go back, if you go back far enough, to bat viruses. Yeah, you got your pig coronaviruses. There was a porcine Delta coronavirus that's never been seen in humans before, and all of a sudden it jumps and makes several people sick this past year. So this is a thing. We live in a world of near misses, and thank goodness our immune systems work really well. But think back to all the times when you've had a sniffle or a cold. How many times did you go somewhere and get a molecular test that said exactly which virus you had?
Right.
And a molecular test that would have picked up new viruses that we didn't know about. I mean, there are ways to do this. There are parts of sort of generic classes of virus that you can look for. But those are expensive tests, and this is not what you're going to get at your, you know, friendly neighborhood doctor, and because it's not what we normally need. But, yeah, some percentage of those are probably exotic things that, for one reason or another, and thank goodness, just never really took hold in humans and never really spread well.
Gazette reporter Aaron Brand interviewed Texarkana musicians Heather Lynn and Jace Bryant, who sounded great performing a couple of their original songs.
You want to tell them about it?
Yeah, so this song was written by a friend of mine up in Washington State named Josh Buffer. I've never met him person to person, face to face. But he reached out through me through Instagram, actually, and was like, I would really like to write a song for you. Wow. And so I'm like, that's great, but I don't want no fluff. I'm not a fluff kind of girl. You know what I mean?
has it happened before that someone has just kind of contacted you?
Not like that, no. Not out of the blue, like, not with me. Now, we have friends that are songwriters that we've collaborated with and, you know, that are great songwriters. But this one, he just came to me, and I told him kind of what I wanted, and he wrote it. Mm-hmm. And then Jace put the music to it, mm-hmm. and it really turned out to be a pretty good little song. It's called Dirt Road. It's just kind of about your favorite watering hole. You know what I mean?
Awesome. Backwoods bars.
Backwoods bars, yeah.
Let's hear it.
Swinging doors keep swinging, whiskey ain't watered down. There's a live band on the stage, chicken wire all around. Beer bottles, peanut shells, broken on the floor. And I wait for 7K, she gets tipped a little more.
2 miles down the road and left at the creek. Watch out for the cattle, y'all, and an old double tree. You know it when you make it, it'd be hell of a night. So get your good time ready and come join us inside.
Boston's are all shaky, parking lot made of dirt. Car sharing for a good time on Sundays after church. Fried gizzards on the menu. On flat, they're on tap, and there's potluck every Wednesday night at a corner match out back.
2 miles down the road and left out the creek. Watch out for the cattle, y'all, and an old double tree. You know it when you make it, it'll be a hell of a night. So get your good time ready and come join us inside.
Pray you've had your shots. It's my go-to more times than it's never.
2, 3, hey.
2 miles down the road and left out the creek. Watch out for the cattle, y'all, and old double tree. You know it when you make it. So get your good time ready and come join us inside. So get your good time ready and come join us inside.
Best Dirt Road.
Best Dirt Road, yeah.
Arklatex Comic Con founder Ray Couch talked about the huge popularity of sci-fi, fantasy, and comics in American culture.
Speaking of how old I am, I can remember when I was a kid back in the 80s, geek culture, as we come to call it, this, you know, fantasy, sci-fi, fandom, comics, movies, TV, was really much more of a subculture. It, at least it seemed to have been a lot fewer people.
Right.
Sort of more isolated. And, of course, the internet has changed a lot how people can find each other. But that doesn't seem to account for the whole change in how mainstream all this stuff has gotten in the past, I don't know, what would you say, 15, 20 years?
In the last 15 to 20 years, geek is now chic. Geek is cool.
What happened? How do you account for that?
Because every generation has something they look back to. Mm-hmm. And you have to agree, the political climate, the work climate, the social, you know, economic climate, everything's been stiff for the last two decades. And we look back to a time where it wasn't so. We need a release back to a better time, an easier time, where we could let go and be children again.
Right.
So that's why we cling to these superhero movies. You know, yes, we all have a light bill to pay, but it's really great to see Captain America smash Hydra,
right,
or AIM. And it's really good to see Iron Man create his suit. We were there with him in the theater when under, you know, we like to see a hero survive,
right,
a hero prevail. We put ourselves in their shoes so that we can become, we are the heroes. And that's something else about my show. That's one of my sayings. You are your own hero. And that's what we really weigh into. We idolize these people because we want to be like them so that we can become overcome and show our children we can overcome daily problems as heroes. Mm-hmm. And to be stalwart and truthful and overcome the bad guys, as it were,
right,
as our own heroes.
Texarkana Symphony Orchestra Executive Director Andrew Clark explained why it's important to have a symphony here.
So how challenging is it to make the case that a city the size of Texarkana needs a symphony orchestra?
It's a challenge at times with some, but now that we've been here for 16 years, it's easier and easier to do. It's a much clearer picture can be painted now to the economic development entities in town. We are very often called upon by those seeking to bring businesses here or to look at land as possible businesses, working with Tex Americas and others. And they want to know, those potential tenants or potential companies want to know, what are the cultural arts? And there have been at least two occasions in the last 8 years that they specifically ask, is there a symphony orchestra?
And wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, they know that is a marker to the city's belief in and investment in cultural arts and entities, because the symphony has been known for centuries within large cities or medium-sized cities as the core of that activity. The other thing that is a huge driver and is the reason why it's important is all the string programs in the schools. When we were first formed, the Arkansas side had a pretty good string program. Mm-hmm. St. James Day School had a string program, but there were no strings in TISD, and the programs were, hurting for musicians and such. So we partnered with a lot of those districts to bring in some of our musicians to actually staff for a period of time and help. And so that now has created a resource for us. We work with all the school districts, helping to solidify if they need string teachers and even just general music teachers. And we have partnerships and curriculums that we work with those music teachers. A great one we're starting is this year with Carnegie Hall. It's called a link-up program used throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And provides a curriculum and a way that our student concerts aren't just field trips now. They'll be interactive things where the kids actually get to play or sing.
Oh, wow.
Or move. And so we're introducing that this year. We tried to do it last year, but, COVID upset the apple cart there.
Yeah.
But that's one of the big things. There's not a month that goes by that we don't get a couple of calls in our office. Hey, I've been transferred here. My kids were in the orchestra program at a school. What is there an orchestra program? Mm-hmm. And the answer is there are now in the majority of the schools. There's a string program. And then our youth symphony, which we were able to form in the second year, mm-hmm. From the grant that the Junior League gave us back in 2007, that 100th anniversary grant, provides that ensemble where wind and brass and percussion and strings can all play together. And that ensemble rehearses and meets at TISD at Texas High, is under the direction of our longtime youth symphony director, Steve Bennett. But the kids that are in it come from all over, far away as Mena and Mount Pleasant.
Oh. Wow.
And so they draw from everywhere. And it's really the only ensemble of its kind. You'd have to go to Shreveport to find any other ensemble of its kind.
Texarkana journalist Sabrina McCormick told Aaron Brand why she traveled to Northern Ireland to study and how that work intersects with her work as a reporter.
So that path brought you to the Belfast area to study
Peace and conflict studies, which is...
What is that about?
Wow, so...
And why study it?
You know, Aaron, how long have you been a reporter now?
I'm almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
Yeah.
I think I've been, 15 years now? Because I started at the Gazette and I was still so new. I didn't know anything when I started here. But as I have been a reporter, conflict is just an ever-present part of what we cover.
Sure is.
And whether that conflict is violent conflict or conflict that is just internal conflict through struggles of power, this degree, in my opinion, is a broadly applicable study in conflict, how that plays out in the way people handle conflict and how we report conflict.
Sure.
So one of the things that we studied was a conflict analysis, which in general is sort of what we're supposed to do as reporters, I think, is to look at the roots of the conflict, the sort of the manifestations of that conflict and how it plays out in other people's lives. So you have to see that conflict for all angles. And if these studies did nothing for me, they really brought home just how important it is and how difficult it is to really report on conflicts on any level.
Suicide prevention advocate Betty Jackson Carpenter shared the story of her daughter's suicide and encouraged those who have lost loved ones to come out of the darkness. Is this the sort of thing that people are reluctant to talk about? Is there a stigma or shame around it?
There seems to be, and that is one of our main focuses, to remove that stigma. That's why our group is called Out of the Darkness. Bring mm-hmm. it out and talk about it. Yeah. You know, nobody should be ashamed. Mm-hmm. You're not ashamed if you lost your child in a car wreck.
Right.
You know, or you lost them to a deadly illness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why should you be ashamed? Say their name. You know, they say that a parent protects their child, and a grieving parent protects their child's memory.
Right.
And that is so true. Mm-hmm. You have to say their name. Don't forget them. What they did was not against the law. Stop right. saying committed suicide.
And finally, in episode 10, Rob Sitterly told us just what RTEX Ready is and how he's working to bring new jobs to the local economy. So first of all, just for people who may not know, what is RTEX Ready and what's its purpose? First of all, it's an acronym, right? What does it stand for?
It is an acronym for Arkansas Texas Regional Economic Development Incorporated.
Okay.
And so we are
the Regional Economic Development Group, and our mission is to bring new jobs and new opportunities to the region. And so I get this question all the time. I mean, I've worked in Florida under two governors where I ran the business development team for the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. And at that position, we were called Enterprise Florida. Terrible name that everyone thought we were maybe renting cars. No, we were the lead economic development group there for the state. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you say that, people say, well, what does that really mean? What do you do? Well, we meet with businesses, you know, in hundreds and hundreds of them on an annual basis, no different than here in a regional approach. You know, we're meeting with probably dozens and dozens of businesses, site selectors, all those individuals that are making decisions of where they want to locate a business, either relocate it from the Northeast or places in the Midwest, like the state of Illinois, which is extremely high tax, or the West Coast, mm-hmm. Where California is literally pricing people out. So they'll make a decision. Do they want to relocate or do they want to take a facility that is in need of expansion and completely build a brand new spot somewhere? And so our ready, short for Artex Ready, Ready's whole goal is to get out in front of these folks and convince them that Texarkana, and when I say Texarkana, I'm talking about the MSA.
Right.
Miller and Bowie counties are the region that we represent. We want to get out in front of those folks and just convince them how incredible our region is for a business expansion relocation.
Thanks for joining me on this look back at On the Line's first 10 episodes. And once again, thanks for listening. On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on the line.